Hello, useful content creators, and this intro today is mainly for the people who will be listening to this in audio only. Why is that important for me to mention? Because today we're going to look at home studio build-outs, and there's going to be a section in the middle where there's going to be a lot of visual references. And the only way you're going to see that is if you go check the video out. Now, this is going to stream to LinkedIn and my personal Facebook, as well as the Relate Studios YouTube page. So go check it out there if you're listening to this audio right now. But if you are content with only hearing and not seeing what we're talking about, you could do that as well. Or you could listen to it twice. You could listen to it here, then go and check it out in visuals thereafter. But we're going to be talking with a home studio expert, and we're going to explore his 7 stages of home studio build out and the 5 things you need to focus on when building out your own home studio. And in the middle, there's going to be a really cool lighting demonstration. So if you want to see that and not just hear it, the episode is dropping at noon on the day of release of the audio, so you could hop across at that time to see it live, or you could check it out thereafter. But in the meantime, let's talk about home studio build outs and let's make useful content. Teaching you to make useful content so that you can build long-term relationships with the people that matter to your business. Hello and welcome to the Useful Content Podcast. And today we have a new teacher in our Useful Content Classroom, Junaid Ahmed. Hi, Junaid.
Hey, Jima. So awesome to be here. Thanks for the invitation and bringing me on.
Yeah, it's good to have you on, man. I think we would have actually met on a live stream. I can't remember. DJ was there. A couple of people were there. And we were doing this joint live stream together. And that would have been some, like 2 years ago or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's great to have you back on. I know you've been doing good stuff in the studio building space. So we came to talk today about some of that. But before we get into that, could you tell the people what you do and how you help your clients make useful content?
Absolutely. So what I do is I'm a home studio architect, meaning I help you figure out your lighting, your camera, your microphone, your audio treatment, your room treatment. All basically, it's all around, hey, what gear do I get? There's a ton of questions people throw around. Hey, what camera are you using? What microphone should I get? What do you have going on with the lighting? Like, people are always asking these questions because, number one, they're stepping into the space, or they've been doing it, but they've been doing it, you know, on their phone because they wanted to get the reps in and get comfortable. So I help them figure out the gear. I help them design their space so it resonates with who they are and where they want to take it.
I saw that when you were helping a guy, well, people wouldn't know who this is, but I'm going to call his name anyway, Andy, with his home studio, you asked a really interesting question. The question you ask is, if you got invited to speak on the news in 10 minutes, would you be able to join and look your best? And I guess inside of that, what you've said too, without saying that, is sound your best too. Why might it be important for someone to be able to get on camera fast and look and sound their best?
You know, a lot of the times we have a ton of things going on. We were talking in the green room and we were asking, hey, how many tabs do you have open? Do you leave open? Right. So just like we have so many tabs open, we have a lot of things running in our heads. And when we are invited to be on a call, which is going to make or break how you present yourself on camera, it's important that you're not spending too much time on it. The only way that's possible is that if you've preemptively set up your space properly. It's like when you have the guests come to your home unannounced, you're not unfolding chairs and tables. Like, oh, let me set up this table, because we already have dining rooms, living rooms, family rooms set up so that we can perform the task that we want to. The best chefs spend a ton of time in preparation because they know the food that's going to come to order when the restaurant opens up. So this is the same way. You want to make sure that you have things in place so that when you're called upon to show up to share your insights as an expert, because we are all experts as entrepreneurs. You're not spending too much time in setting all of those things up.
Well, it's interesting because some people, like I know even for you years ago, you didn't have, let's say, a dedicated space. Mm-hmm. But, well, I guess the pandemic did a lot of good things for all of us. We created dedicated spaces now. So how can someone record their videos? What about if they don't have a dedicated space? Is there any way around that? Or is there any way that they can create something out of a tiny space, or maybe do it so that they could be more mobile? Is that a thing that can happen as well?
Absolutely. You know, the few things that you want to focus on when you're setting up any space, it could be, you could be in your backyard, you could be in your living room, you could be in your garage. You want to make sure that you're avoiding bright lights into the camera, because those bright lights need to be shining on you. So use those windows to light yourself up. Make sure that you have a dedicated microphone or a microphone close up enough to you. There's $10, $20 wireless microphones or lavalier microphones that you can attach, because it's all about the message and how clearly people on the other side can hear. So if you can take care of those two things, getting good audio and good lighting on you, I think you're going to be golden, because the message is still going to resonate with the people listening on the other side.
Yeah, I agree. And I also am big on getting that message across. And anything you could kind of set up or do beforehand so that it makes it easier to get that message across, because everything is in service to delivering the message. Yeah, so that's good stuff. That's a good setup and a segue to get into the seven stages of a home studio setup. So I know you've been doing this for a while and you've systematized everything. I just kind of built my studio over a period of time, and I have a dedicated mm-hmm. space now that wasn't there before. Even up to last year, we didn't have that. So we, you know, we literally had to renovate the house to do that. But I know you help people with their spaces and you've systematized it. So let's talk about those seven steps and really get into what those steps are and how people can apply those things for themselves, even if they might not want to hire a Junaid, mm-hmm. but how they can do it for themselves. And I know you believe we need to get educated on this proper lighting stuff, on the audio and the content that resonates and captures audio attention, captures our audience attention. So let's mm-hmm. first start with step number one, if you want to start there, or maybe there might be something else you want to put ahead of that to get people's studio, home studio set up.
100%. So there's actually five steps that I go through, which walk you through, hey, here's the five different things that you want to look at when you're setting up your space. The seven stages are different stages that you might be at. So the stage number one is the novice. You've got a phone, you have a willingness to share your message. How do you go about doing that? Well, it's really simple. Get in front of a light, get in front of a window, and start recording your content, because the reps is really important. So that's stage one, the novice. Stage two is when you become the hobbyist. Like, okay, you know what? I'm doing a lot more with this. Let me go deeper. Let me go invest in a higher end microphone. Let me see if I can get some lights. So you're going from one stage to the next stage. And then as you keep climbing up to those stages, from hobbyist, you're then the enthusiast. Then you are the semi-pro. Then you become a pro. Then you go become an expert. And then the last stage, which is the seventh stage, you'll become the broadcast master, because now you've overcome all of your things that blocked you from creating content. You've overcome the imposter syndrome. You've overcome all of the things. You've put in a ton of reps. You're now known as the person that you've been claiming to be. You're known as information that you've been teaching. And you can literally go on any camera or, you know, on your smartphone, whatnot. It's basically a full circle, because stage one, you start with your phone, you know, just to get the reps in. Stage seven, you have a nice space set up, but then you can also jump on your phone to create that connection with the audience. It's really interesting. So the seven stages are essentially that. So step one is we're telling everybody, hey, just get started. Just put in the reps. Because if you want to go run a marathon, what do we start doing? Well, we need to first get in the habit of putting our shoes on, get in the habit of start running, get in the habit of doing more of those running so that you can actually do run that marathon.
Stage one in your home studio is just kind of get started. Just grab your phone.
Let's get started, yeah.
Stand in front of a window. Is there anything somebody else needs to know, or they just have to kind of take it and just do whatever they can? Are there anything else as important?
The important thing is, why are you even doing this? As you're creating more and more content, as you're standing in front of the camera, you're building yourself up. And some of the things that you can probably focus on is, before you even get started, what do you think about? Right. So first thing that I say is, the first step into setting up your space is analyze your room. So we call it the room analysis. In analyzing your room, you're figuring out, okay, where do I have my doors and windows, and where could there be distraction in this space? In my room alone, I have this nice cubby area in the back of me. So when I initially set up my office in here to work from home, to do whatever, I set up my desk back there, right? Because I saw what I was seeing and I was like, this is going to be a nice little nook for my computer. But when I started my podcast and turned the camera on, guess what I saw in it? I saw these two nice bright windows in my backdrop. And as I continued to move forward, I was like, if I had followed my own steps back then that I hadn't developed yet, I would have set my desk here. So that's what I did, right? So windows in front of you. So even if you don't have any lighting, you have light coming in through the window. Mm-hmm. So that's step one, you know, analyze your room, make sure that there's no bright lights in there, make sure there's no doors or windows or closets. I mean, if there are, you can create a story around, hey, this door, I have the guest coming in pretty soon, so hold on. You know, you can kind of like integrate your room into the show. So that's step one. Step two is designing your space. Set the camera up. Could be iPhone, could be DSLR. What is the camera seeing besides you? And how do you want to highlight that? And as you go through these step by step, you'll notice, and we've already noticed, a ton of people are sitting in front of walls, plain walls, colorful walls, walls with plaques on it, with photos on it, with logos on it, all sorts of things. That's the evolution as you go through your own journey of building your studio space.
I love that point you made, and I hadn't thought about it like that. You said in step two, which is the design stage of putting up your home studio, is that you have to figure out what is the camera seeing besides you. Mm-hmm. So apart from you, the person who's talking, the subject, the person who is supposed to be on camera, what else is the camera seeing? And I guess you're referring to, like, what is in the background and what is in the mm-hmm. foreground and what's in your space that people can see apart from yourself. Because I suspect that those things could either add or take away from from the frame. Could you kind of give an example, or maybe in your experience that you've, when setting up things, what could add or take away from a frame when people are doing step two and designing their studio?
So what would definitely add is if you have posters, if you have things that you love, memorabilia and stuff like that. For example, we all have seen Gary Vaynerchuk's office, right? All of the stuff that's behind him, all the collectibles that he's collected, right? Those are things that he cherishes, and that's why they're back there. And now when you frame a shot like that, you can see the things that people resonate with that are in the shot. So I call the people in the shot the talent. So you're the talent, you know, and then we're focusing on the talent lighting. So those things that go in the background needs to exude your personality. Some other people, they've got bookshelves. You're an author, you're a writer, you love reading books. You've got lots of books in your background or a bookshelf. You just want it really clear and straightforward. It could be just a plain wall with just one small message on there. Again, it all comes down to who you are as a personality. There's a gentleman named Dan Coe. His background is completely dark. He might have things in there, but it's completely dark because he wants you to focus on him. And he has a book called The Art of Focus. So it's in line with the message that he's trying to deliver. So your video becomes a secondary message because as we're listening to the message, our eyes are collecting so much more data that you subconsciously don't know till you know.
And I guess the thing about it is that you do something that is important to you, memorabilia, or maybe something that you like and have different things. Back when my studio was arranged different, I used to have like figurines and different things inside of there. And I still have some things on the side here.
Yeah.
My sand troopers inside of that.
Nice.
And all those different things. But I guess too, a big part of it too, and this would lead into your third point, which I think is talent lighting. Mm-hmm. But a big part of it is like, how can you set up your studio in a way that also doesn't distract, but adds? And maybe there might be a danger that people might hear, well, put things you like in memorabilia, and then they stack a set of stuff all around them. And so that causes a problem. Have you seen that happen to people? And how can the next step, which is talent lighting, help to prevent that?
Absolutely. So one thing that I say is to have distance between the things that you are showcasing and yourself, right? So if you have some distance, if you create that distance between yourself and the stuff that you're showcasing, then it creates that, hey, that stuff is back there to grab your attention, but the focus should be, come back here, listen to what I'm talking about. And we've seen that in videos from Pat Flynn. He's got those things in the background, the shoes from Back to the Future, the YouTube plaques that he's gotten, like all those things, they kind of add in because each and every element in that video is adding into your personal brand. And as you build that personal brand, people will recognize you and connect you on a deeper level. The people know about me that I love Star Wars and I love the superheroes. So now we have another element that we could talk about. And that's what builds communities, a deeper connection.
I've seen your Star Wars poster. It's off to your left on the wall, the graphic poster.
I've
seen that. And so let's flow into the third one, which is talent lighting. Why is talent lighting? And when you say talent, you refer to the person. Why is talent lighting important?
Well, because when you are invited to a show, it's you, the talent, that is invited to the show, not your background. I mean, and we've seen a lot of people use virtual backgrounds with these nice large logos. It's great for your videos that you're going to create for your content, but not when you're being interviewed on a podcast, because those things could go away in the future. For example, I knew somebody, they put a lot of effort into building this brand where it's two partners. But after a few years, they went their separate ways because they want to build something on themselves. All the work that they put into that partnership, well, it now needs to go back into thinking, okay, how do we do this again? One of the saddest moments was when Daft Punk broke up.
Oh, yeah, for real. Well, it made a whole video on it. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So it's like, how do you rebrand yourself? So what are you going to showcase and what do you want to highlight the light? So I like to focus on talent lighting. And if you'll see my video, I'm turning off certain light.
Right. For all those who are just hearing the audio right now, Junaid is systematically removing each one of his light setups. So he's gone from very colorful to now almost monochromatic in the background, taking off light. So you have one single light source on now.
It's a one single light. And if I turn that off, you know, I'm basically painting with light.
I know he's completely dark. So he's just demonstrating how lighting can go. Oh, so this is your edge light. This is on your shoulders.
So this is my shoulder and edge light, yes.
Right. So those who are listening to the audio podcast, go look at the video. The video is very interesting as Junaid demonstrates how he is putting together his lighting setup one by one. So you have one source on your shoulder, your edge lighting. You have one source that comes into your face. You just put some light on the background there, which is not colored yet, but it lit up the background a bit. And I suspect you're going to add color. So that's another colored light. It's kind of a purple light that is common in his background right now. And then he adds, this is a really amazing light. It's kind of a hot, maybe deep red or pink or something like that light. It meshes with the purple really nicely.
Yeah.
And it adds some nice dimension to his background. So you're going to want to see this for real, like actually look at it and see how he puts together the lighting setup. So what you're demonstrating right now is that you have the background, but the talent lighting is very important so that they can stand out and separate themselves from the background, yes?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the talent lighting is focusing on you alone. And even if you just start with one simple light that shines on you, that's all you need to be seen. That's all you need to deliver a message. That's all you need to show up and stand out.
Right, that's excellent. That's excellent. All right, so the talent lighting and goes along with your studio design to get your visuals right. But not only do we want to look right, we also want to sound right.
Amen.
So the fourth step is, I think, is audio treatment.
Audio treatment, audio mastery. And now we've experienced this a lot. If you're on a call with tons of people in the room, there might be one or two people that are either driving or they're on their laptop, and you can also hear the echo or the echo reflection or the audio reflection in their voice. Basically, they're in a room where there's a lot of flat surfaces. So not only do you hear them, but then it also reflects back and you hear them again at a, you know, millisecond delay. Because those are audio reflections. Our audio is wave-based, right? We call it, it's a waveform, because as we speak, we create these waves in our vocal cords and we send this audio out. And as these waves travel in our room, if there's any flat surfaces, they're going to bounce back and get caught on a microphone. Now, I had that issue because when I set up my wall on this side, it was really flat and I really liked the look of it, but I was like, you know what? It's creating a lot of audio reflection. How do I minimize that? So I started adding posters. I started adding, pictures and stuff like that. And that's going to help reduce those reflections. If you have a nice big desk, guess what it's going to do? It's going to reflect the sound off of the desk. So make sure you have a nice big large mouse pad or some kind of pad on there that's going to absorb sound or keep it from reflecting. A lot of the times we have a lot of walls. Walls are hard because you can either use, I mentioned earlier, you can either use paintings or sound absorption foam panels or even curtains. All of these things will help absorb the sound. And then the floor. If you have a carpet floor, perfect, you're in a good place. But if you have those nice, beautiful wood floors, you want to throw a rug in there, or if you're using that space for recording all the time, throw in some blankets because you want to absorb that sound. You want to keep it from bouncing around. And then all of these things are small treatments in your room to get your audio clean. And you can still use that laptop microphone. It's not going to sound the best, but you're going to avoid, you're going to cut down on all of those reflections that are coming in. The next investment would be to get a dedicated microphone. You've got a nice, beautiful red microphone. I've got a simple MV7 microphone, which is a USB microphone, the simplest one that you can get, it's a dynamic microphone. So the closer you are to it, the better you sound, and it's going to keep from catching a sound from in your surrounding.
This microphone I have is a Rode NT1. I used to, for a tiny bit, a short time in life, I was doing audio production for a tiny bit, like 2 seconds in life. And this is one of the things I got with the Rode NT1. It happens to be a condenser mic. Could you explain the difference between a dynamic mic and a condenser mic so people understand what they should buy and shouldn't buy?
Sure. So dynamic microphones are the ones that are the workhorse of the performance industry. So anybody that's on the stage, they're using these dynamic microphones because they're holding them really close to their mouths. They're holding them in place because there's a lot of performers standing in that room or on that stage. You want to make sure that you're not catching the drum or you're not catching the guitar into the microphone. So these dynamic microphones are designed so they're close to your mouth and it'll capture your sound perfectly in its most accurate form. Condenser mics can be placed further away, but they have a lot larger dynamic range and they are a lot more sensitive to small sounds in your room. And I've used a condenser mic when I first started the Blue Yeti. And I started hearing my kids in the recordings. I'm like, what? I didn't hear them initially because I keep my volume down when I'm listening to through the microphone. But the microphone caught all those things. So I was like, okay, time to change from a condenser microphone to a dynamic microphone. So those are the two differences.
Yeah. So dynamic mics are less sensitive and need to be closer to your mouth in order to for the audio to sound the way it should sound. And then condenser microphones are more sensitive. So you probably get your kids in the other room if they're loud enough. And those are probably better for maybe, I don't know, high-end production because they have a greater dynamic range. But for podcasting where it's mostly your voice or if you're on a live show, then dynamic mics work really well, yes?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Oh, okay, great. So let's talk a little bit more about audio because I think the visuals people, I mean, going to get to the fifth thing, which I think is camera and lenses. You're going to get to that. So people can jump from their laptop cameras into that. But let's talk a tiny bit more about audio because obviously if you have a mic, something has to hold it in place. Yes. What do you recommend? Like if someone wants to get a mic like yours, which is a Shure, it was SM7V.
MV7.
MV7, right, which is a USB mic. What would they have to get in order to hold the mic close to their mouth? Because it needs to be close to their mouth.
So there's a lot of different options. You can get a simple desktop stand that'll sit right in front of you, and you can, you know, mount the microphone right on top of it. Or you can get a little desk arm, which is a little longer, and you can kind of like sweep away the microphone when you're not using it. So those are two different options that you can use. I've seen people hold these microphones on these short videos as well, which looks really funny. Like, all right, you're doing the right thing by, you know, using a good microphone, but hey, as long as people can hear you, that's all that matters.
Yeah, I've done both. Right now I have one of these low profile boom arms. Hopefully that didn't mess up the audio too much. But I used to have this, and people can't see it. This is one of these here. These
desktop. Yeah, it's a little desktop stand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all the way down there. And I guess it depends on, I guess, what's convenient for you, I guess, or what determines which one you get.
Well, the arm is, of course, costs a lot more than the little desk stand. The desk stand is, you know, anywhere from $20 to $40 maybe, whereas the arm might be from $60 to $100, depending on which brand you get.
Is there a difference in quality from USB to say, I know we haven't spoken about XLR mics, we've spoken about USB, but is there a different, because, you know, some people might hear about XLR mics and might want to know what they are. Is there a difference in quality?
So the XLR mics will give you probably a lot more gain built into it because XLR mics need an external interface. And in that interface, it has a lot more processing power. So it'll give you probably a little more oomph for your buck. And then you probably wouldn't have to speak as loud when you have a, you know, XLR microphone. So again, there's a lot of different things, and it all comes from experimenting. Okay, you start with one. Okay, how am I getting that? There's a ton of research already done. There's tons of YouTube videos where this gentleman tested 10 different microphones. This is what this microphone sounds like, and this is how much this microphone costs. you know, you can spend anywhere from literally $100 to $1,200 on the microphone alone, not even talking about the extra equipment and gear that goes into it.
Right. So mics are a big deal. And I kind of was hovering around this part of it because the phones look nice and everything, but that mic quality is really what defines, like, people hear the audio and they're like, oh, that sounds good. You know, you could tell the difference between something that has a decent mic and like a laptop mic. Laptop mics haven't gotten theirs yet.
You know? Now, the reason laptop mics are still struggling because they're, again, attached to the laptop and you're much farther away. But guess what's happening time and time again? There's better technology is coming. For example, the iPhone has three microphones built in. They use multiple microphones to cut down the surrounding sound and then boost up your volume. So that feature is already built in these devices. So pretty soon, laptop microphones are going to go the same way with AI on the rise. I mean, there's so many things at play. Pretty soon, you wouldn't need anything at all. We'd just be talking to each other in a virtual microphone setup or something. Like the Vision Pros, right? I mean, they've got built-in microphones and you're having perfect conversation.
Yeah. Well, you can tell the difference right now between the microphones, but maybe there'll be a time when you can't tell the difference. Mm-hmm. And I guess even unless you're going live, even if you have a recorded podcast, you could then come afterwards and apply some noise removal or something of that sort to enhance the sound.
Post-production, right?
Post-production. You want to do as little as that as possible, hopefully.
Amen. Yes.
You don't want to spend 2 hours on fixing the sound when you could have just gotten it right on the on the stream or on the podcast recording. Okay. Actually, right now, I don't know if I should say this, but right now I have a podcast that I forgot to turn my mic on and it has my laptop audio. And I tried to fix the sound and it's just not sounding good at all. And so I'm probably going to have to re-record my pieces on the podcast, which I'm not looking forward to at all.
Well, I've got a solution for you, my brother. And and this is what I've done for my podcast. So post-production in my podcast, I used to record intro to the guest that my editor then puts that intro before the actual start of the podcast. And there was a time where we had 50 episodes that were waiting for me to record an intro. And I was like, okay, my God, that's 50. That's almost an hour of intro, me sitting there and recording intros. And I discovered this tool, this AI tool called 11 Labs.
Ooh.
Now, 11 Labs could clone your voice from your previous recordings. And you can give it the text and it'll create the speech based on your cloned voice. And now, very recently, so when I first discovered 11 Labs almost 2 years ago, it was very simple. But as technology has gotten better and better over time, they now have a space called Voice Labs where you can discover AI-generated voice and other people are also submitting their voice for professional recordings. So you can literally hire somebody else to do your intro, hire somebody else to do a question or a segment all through this tool. So I was like, okay, let me create my own professional voice. So now I gave it about an hour of my own video voices from my videos. They took about 24 hours or something to tune that voice in so that it could be used with AI. So now I had to create a solo episode one time and I was like, oh my God, I was sick. My voice was out. So I was like, you know, why don't I just use this tool? So I took the text from my script, dropped it in there, clicked play, and boom, it was done within seconds.
Really?
Yes, sir.
I know what 11 Labs. I'd love to hear that episode to see how much of how much of Junaid is in there.
Episode 600 on the podcast is my solo episode, all done with AI, or, you know, I mean, it's my cloned voice. But that's something you could do. So you don't have to go through the recording, because you already have a ton of really good recordings. You could take those, pop them in there, and then, you know, create the pieces that you missed out on.
I have to go listen to that episode to see. I wish I had just stumbled across it. It would have been a good talking point to know if that was, I might have questioned it. Who knows? But I'll go listen to it when we are done here to see what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to step five. And step five, I think, is camera and lenses.
That's right. So in the seven stages of your home studio evolution, from novice to hobbyist to enthusiast to the semi-pro, professional, and the expert and the broadcast master, it's the enthusiast level, which is the third stage, is when you go from using your smartphone camera to a mirrorless camera. So the first two stages, use your phone camera as much as you can. In fact, I know people that use two phones in their setup, one phone for their face, one phone to look down on their desk as they're creating things. My friend who's a scrapbooker, he's got a scrapbooking community, she uses two smartphones. I'm like, why not? It does the job. So enthusiast stage is where you start becoming more sophisticated and you invest in a crop sensor mirrorless camera and add some lighting. So cameras are really essential in capturing your imagery. And if you have the lighting dialed in correctly, any camera will make you look really good. It's just a matter of, okay, now you're ready to go to that next stage.
Right. So moving from a smartphone to, let's just say, a mirrorless camera of some sort. And I see you deliberately say mirrorless because, like, DSLRs are on their way out. Mm-hmm. You know, all the companies, all of these popular companies, Canon and Nikon, who are the traditional guys. But then, like, Sony and then Panasonic and all those guys, they are now only making mirrorless cameras. So you have to jump on that. Is it quite expensive to get a mirrorless camera, or are there affordable options?
So question, you know, that's a really great question. What is affordable? For some people, $5,000 is affordable. For some people, $300 is affordable. So what I say is check your budget and then see what falls into that. And there's a ton of options. I have at least four used mirrorless cameras in my studio that cost about $300. $300, you can get a nice mirrorless camera that can connect to your computer through a HDMI capture card. Pretty easy to get into. So that's why I recommend getting a used camera if you can to get started. And then, of course, you want to get a lens that go with it. Most of the times, these cameras, if you buy them, you can get them anywhere from $400 to $700 with a kit lens. And that kit lens does a really good job. Now, I know people watching this, or not watching this, I just switched over my camera from my face cam to my overhead camera. And in this camera, I have the kit lens installed. So I can zoom in and zoom out and you can kind of see what I'm showing. So that's what a kit lens does. And it gives you a lot of options as your face camera too, because now you can say, hey, I want to go from 15 millimeter to 45. And then you can figure out how far or how close you want the camera to be from in front of you.
Right. And so once you set that up, and I guess it's autofocus right now, my camera is manual focus because it's old, but you have your camera on autofocus because once you're in the frame, it will pick up on your face. Is that what is the benefit?
Yeah. So so these cameras have eye tracking capability now. So no matter how far or how close you are, it'll track that eye and it'll focus in on your face, because the eye is the one, the main focus that you want to, you know, be focused on. That's how we make the connection with our guests.
You want to get that nice and sharp.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. So let me just jump back a little bit. When you were doing the lighting demonstration earlier, which also I'll encourage people to go and watch the video if they listen to the audio only and see Junaid's lighting demonstration where he put on and took off his lights and showed how it's all built up step by step. You didn't get up from your seat. You sat right in your seat.
Yes.
And you did it, right? How did that work? How do you do that? If somebody said, "Oh, this is Mark, does he have an assistant?" You know, mm-hmm. How does that work?
I do have an assistant, and it's a virtual assistant, right? So there's technologies that have been around for over a few decades where you can do automation in your home pretty easily. Back in the days, they were using 2.4G technology to talk to devices in your home. Now we're talking to our devices through Wi-Fi. So when we moved into the home, I was like, I want to make my home a smart home. So I've upgraded the light switches and power strips in my home so they talk to each other, and they're all on HomeKit. That's Apple's smart home platform. But you can do this with Alexa. You can do this with Google Home. You can do this with other platform providers as well. I don't know if Microsoft has anything. I think they're just a software company now who sells Windows and Microsoft Office. So Google Home, Alexa, HomeKit, these are the three options. So on my computer here, I have something called running the Home app. In it, I can see my entire home from cameras to lights to air conditioning and whatnot. And I can choose my room, which is Home Studio. And I've set up different scenes in here. So I have a scene called office where, you know, I come in here, I say, hey, office time, and then only that light turns on. And I have a scene set up as studio time, which then enables the five lights that I turned on. And I have them on individual poles or individual power strips that can then turn them on and off. And the cool part is they will turn them on back at where the initial setting was. It just makes it a lot easier for me to, you know, be ready in a moment's notice to be on camera.
Yeah, I love that. My assistant is at these two things here, my hands. I have to go and manually turn everything on. But yeah. that's just a function of not having the trouble yet to do it. Like if right. I was like saying, I needed to get this done because it's too much of trouble to turn everything on. I think it's too close to me. That's why I'm saying that. But as soon as it becomes difficult, I'm going to do exactly what you did.
Yeah.
So those are the five stages that we just went through. Junaid, do you have anything else to add before we bring things in for our landing with the Home Studio setup? I know you're supposed to talk about the seven stages as well, and then the five steps, but we kind of mix them all together, which is good.
Yeah, they're all a combination, right? Because as you go from one stage to the next stage, you're basically just adding in to the mix of what makes your Home Studio. The first stage is, you know, you're using your phone as a camera. And in the book, Seven Stages of Home Studio Evolution, I have a little questionnaire, you know, discover your Home Studio avatar. Where are you right now? You're just starting out using basic equipment like smartphones and in-ear headphones. You're in the novice stage, right? And then you can go from that stage. And then in the hobbyist one, you're then adding in a microphone to your setup, because that's the number one step. Lighting is still free from our windows. Then the next stage up, you're adding a mirrorless camera. You already have microphone, you got lighting, maybe you're adding in some more lights, adding some acoustic panels for better sound. You just go adding more gear to your setup. It's like a little journey into expertise. And then as you go higher and higher, you're now adding additional cameras. For example, I switched my overhead camera to show you the functionality of the zoom lens, or if I'm showcasing a product and whatnot, that's what the overhead camera enables. So you're adding these things as you get comfortable with gear, as you evolve from one stage to the next stage. So my final thing would be just get started, try what you know, and find a community where you are appreciated and you are encouraged to keep trying new things, to keep elevating yourself, to keep evolving.
That's good stuff to end off. Find a community where you can be encouraged to keep elevating yourself and keep evolving. And of course, as you go along, use these steps and use these stages and set up your studio as you would want it to be. This has been great, Junaid. Some people may want to find you online. Could you tell the people how they can contact you? Super Junaid, the website as well, yeah?
That's right.
Right. And your book is on Amazon. That is the... Is it the smartphone? What do you call it?
So I have two, but I have a total of three books out now. The first book that I released last year is Mastering iPhone Video Production. Then earlier this year, I published A to Zoo in Animal Alphabet Symphony for my kids. And then just this week on my birthday, I published the 7 stages of home studio evolution from beginner to broadcast quality.
Oh, great, great, great. So go pick up the 2 first and the last for you, and then pick up the 1 in the middle for the kids, right? So
that's right.
So that will work well. Thank you so much, Junaid, for joining us on the podcast. And thank you so much, students, for being in the Useful Content Classroom. Useful Content Classroom, dismissed. And we're clear. We're clear. Good
All
stuff.
All right. All
good
right.
Stuff. Good it. Stuff.
Yeah, man. This was fun. I get to flex my muscles.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry for the people who are just on audio who are not going to see all the fanciness.
That's okay. They'll be intrigued enough. Like, wait, what happened? He turned off all his lights while he was on video?
It's true. Like, I often tell people about the way in which you set the thing up is that you need a blank canvas. Your blank canvas is your dark room. Yeah. And then you build out the light piece. I really love your rim light. I noticed it in the other videos. Like, oh, this is great. Yeah. Define the shoulders, separate you from the background with the nice hair light as well. It's good.
Yeah.
What kind of light is that?
Which kind of light is which one?
The rim light.
The rim light. It's just a flat panel. It's just a flat panel mounted on the ceiling. Let me show you. Because we can show things with camera, right? Mm-hmm. So just turn my camera off. Here's the setting. I guess I can't switch camera while we're recording. It's still recording.
Yeah, we're still recording. Well, maybe, you know, there could be another day where you demonstrate everything and do
a
walkthrough.
Of course,
yeah. Yeah, do a walkthrough. But let me just stop the recording. It was great to see all that demonstration. I didn't expect you to do that. That's good. So the people can see the fanciness. Good stuff.
The Useful Content Podcast is brought to you and produced by Relate Studios. You can see the work we do on our website at RelateStudios.com. If you like what you've heard on the podcast today, please follow and come back in 2 weeks for another great episode. And if you want to get more useful content in between that, you can follow me, Juma Bannister, on LinkedIn and on Twitter. We all know it's still Twitter. See you soon in the Useful Content Classroom.